Good morning.
Good morning
and welcome. Welcome to those who are tuning in still on the live stream. We're thankful to be able to provide that, and even with our increased numbers here in the building, we still have 104 viewers from home, and we are blessed to be able to announce that. 87 from this very state, 12 from Texas, 1 from Kansas, and then we have an unknown. Our God is holy and true, and He is worthy of our praise. Amen. Have you ever felt insignificant? Have you ever felt small? Some would say yes, whenever looking at a clear night sky, at all the stars, when we think about what little we really know in regards to the length and depth of the universe. I watched a video, and every once in a while I'll watch it. It just leaves me in amazement, where we see small planets, small stars, larger and larger and larger, and it just seems like they couldn't get any bigger. And yet, even after that, our God is bigger than all of that. Some, when looking at other forms of God's creation, when they see the Grand Canyon, when they see mountains, a beautiful sunset, we see God's handiwork, and some people might feel small. No doubt we've had times where we look at others' accomplishments and we feel small then. We think about what we may have done or may not have done. Or we look at what other people have done, and we measure based on the physical, and we think, man, if they've done all of this, what have I done? How do I measure what I've done? I think we're familiar with the parable of the mustard seed, and the when Christ is talking about faith, the size of a mustard seed can move mountains. We know that such a small thing, this was something that was known to those people at that time. Everybody would be familiar with this, but this small mustard seed would create this bush, almost tree-like, maybe 8, maybe 12 feet high, and the birds would find shade and rest in its branches. We look at these things in the physical sense. All the things that I talked about before, we were measuring ourselves with our physical eyes. We feel like we're not doing much. We feel like what we say really doesn't matter all that much. Our actions, maybe they're not that important. And I can assure you that this is prime territory for the enemy. Satan loves to get you thinking like this, and would oftentimes... I would say would encourage that type of thought. Well, you're right, you actually don't mean very much. What you say really doesn't have an effect. Who do you think is nobody's listening. Nobody's going to listen to you. Your actions are insignificant. What could you possibly expect to accomplish? There's got to be somebody bigger, better, more famous than you that's going to come along. So what really... what good can you do? And the idea behind this is actually interesting, because we're talking about good things and Satan trying to belittle us for the little acts of kindness that we might do in working for God. But he will also try to convince you that those little bad things, those little sins, are just a small thing as well. No one else is being hurt. What does it really matter? It's not going to have effect on anyone else besides me or besides you. I mean, as long as it's just here and there, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, you could be doing a lot worse, right? What does it matter to everybody else? They don't know what you're doing. God wants you to be happy and enjoy yourself, right? This life is about being happy and taking care of number one, as the enemy would say. I mean, we may have even heard the enemy say this before. Does God really not want you to eat that fruit? Did he really say that you're going to die? Does he just not want you to have any fun? This morning I want to discuss a few little things that with God and in reflection of who God is, those little things actually do make a big difference. Those little sins, those negative thoughts, that small encouraging word, those good deeds, and that little prayer can be really important. It's just a little white lie, right? It's just something small. No big deal. It's never hurt anybody. What difference is it going to make? Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 3, Paul is describing to the church at Ephesus in a way that I think everybody would understand. You know, we like to twist things around and we see things a little bit differently. Everybody's got a different idea. We'll just read it here. It says in verse 3, "But among you there must not be even a hint of sexual immorality or of any kind of impurity or of greed, because these are improper for God's holy people." Even a hint. You ever heard anybody describe a small amount, a dash, just a touch, a hint? You ever go to a restaurant where they serve chips and salsa and you get worried when someone says, "Hey, can I just put a hint, a little dash of salt on there?" Maybe it's going to be your dash and my dash is going to be a little bit different. Or when somebody says, when they make fresh salsa from their own vegetables and they say, "Oh, it's just got a hint of kick to it, just got a hint of spice, a hint of spice to it," and you eat it and you feel like you need to call the fire department because your mouth is on fire, right? A little hint is relative. But here, as he is saying, not even a hint. This would include those little problems that we think aren't that big of a deal. Those little bad things that don't really mean much. So let's talk about a few of the little bad things maybe that happened in the Bible. So you guys may have heard of this guy called Moses. He was kind of a rock star in the Old Testament. He did a lot of really good things. Considered one of the greatest leaders that Israel had ever had. Led the nation out of Egypt. He was given many commands in which he followed, but one point in time specifically that I'm going to be talking about, he was given a command to speak to a rock. The Israelites, again, were grumbling. You ever feel like you read that? I read the Bible and we're going through here and I felt like Judges was kind of that way. And again, they did evil in the sight of the Lord and then he sent some, you know, calamity and then they repented and they turned away and then they worshiped God and again, they messed up again. So we have them grumbling because they feel like they're going to die of thirst. And so Moses is irritated with them. And instead of speaking to the rock to have water come out, he strikes the rock. All he did was strike it. I mean, it wasn't that big of a deal, right? But his choice to strike the rock versus speaking to it cost him entrance into the promised land that he was leading the nation of Israel to. You may remember a couple by the name of Ananias and Sapphira in the New Testament. In the early years of the church, as the church was still growing, they come before Peter, and as many others were bringing their gifts and offerings to the church, and they decided, well, we want to do the same thing. We would like to sell this piece of land that we have, and we want to give it to the church. I don't know if they got more than what they thought they were going to get out of the land. Maybe land, the price of land was good that year. I don't know, but they got quite a bit apparently, and they wanted to keep a little bit of it. But they still wanted, that pride kind of came out, they still wanted to tell Peter that this is all we got from the land. We sold that land and we just gave every penny to the church. It's just a little white lie. I mean, we just kept a little bit for ourselves. We still gave a lot. They both, because of their conspiring, lost their lives that day. A few weeks back, Elliot was talking about the story of David and Nabal and Abigail. And if you remember from then, David was with his mighty men out in the fields, and he was kind of a byproduct of them being there. They were protecting Nabal's shepherds, and his flocks while they were out there. They didn't take any of his. They protected. And so David had sent a messenger to request of Nabal some supplies. Nabal was a very rich man, had more than enough to give out and not even feel it. Would be a drop in the bucket to him. But he said, who is this David? He decides, I don't want to give him anything. So a messenger, one of the servants, actually finds out what happened, goes to Abigail. Abigail cuts David and his mighty men off from coming to destroy the house of Nabal, gives them the gifts that that Nabal should have given, and so David spares their household. But Nabal, 10 days after finding out what Abigail had done when she had informed him, 10 days later, the Lord struck him dead. I mean, it was his stuff. Was it that big of a deal that he just wasn't hospitable? Wasn't that big of a deal, right? What about Uzzah? Oh, the great story of Uzzah. Every time, you know, this is that one where even us as humans, we start to go, now that thing you did to Uzzah, God, that was, man, I don't know, were you just when you did that? I mean, he was trying to protect the ark, the sacred object that you yourself said was sacred. And it was going to fall on the ground. And all he did was try to reach out and stabilize it. Touching the ark was just a little thing, right? Because he did that, God struck him dead. It was just a little thing to touch the ark. It was just a little thing that the Israelites were carrying the ark or transporting it on a cart like they'd seen the Philistines do. It was just a little thing that they weren't carrying it as God had commanded. Who are we to say what little sin costs? How can we in the physical sense describe sin, the weight of it? Charles Spurgeon had this to say, wrote this in 1860 specifically about a little narrative on Uzzah. He said, the least sin is so great an evil, so excessively black an abomination, that God were just if he smote us all to hell the moment that we had an idle thought or had uttered a single wrong word. Sin is an immeasurable evil. Man cannot weigh it. It is a gulf without a bottom. It is a desperate evil, the desperateness of which we shall never know unless, as God forbid, we should ever come to feel its terror in the pit of hell. I think this lesson lies upon the very surface of the narrative that we do not know how bad a thing sin is. For if the mere act of touching the ark brought death on Uzzah, what a desperate evil sin must be. As a child, someone very close to me, whose opinion that I highly valued, had a great front row seat to listen to me sing, and I didn't know it. Unbeknownst to me, I had my headphones in, and I was listening to my Walkman. I've been looking forward to this part of the sermon because this is the part where I get to come up here and say, now kids, these things called Walkmans were used to be about this big, and they had a rectangular thing called a cassette inside of them. And a cassette was this thing that played music before we had CDs. Now, I know that there's some other generations that could school me on 8-tracks and some records, but now I'm in that position. I'm officially old when I feel like I have to describe these things that I assume that these kids know. And I'm saying, yeah, on a Walkman or on a cassette. And they think, what is this? So I've got this Walkman in, and I've got this tape going, and I'm singing in my room. And the thing about headphones is you can hear it really well, but nobody else can. And the thing about when you're doing that is everyone can hear you singing. So this individual, whose opinion I highly value, opened the door. Again, I'm facing the other way, and I'm just giving it my all. I mean, I was auditioning, you know, for something, I don't know what, but I was just singing, having a good time. And when I turned around, they were laughing their head off. And I stopped, obviously, hit the stop, and I'm sure turned every shade of red that there is. But that one laugh, there was nothing else said, and the door closed. You think I turned that thing back on and got right back to it? No. That one laugh turned into, man, he can't sing. His singing is a joke. No one wants to hear you sing. Your voice is awful. These are the things that I'm thinking as a young child. And I still vividly remember that occasion. It was just a small gesture. They thought it was funny. But those small sins, those wicked thoughts, those negative words can make a big difference and have lasting effects. In Matthew 5, we have the famous back and forth, the you've heard it said, well, I say. Jesus says, you've heard it said, you shall not murder. I say you shouldn't even insult. You shouldn't be angry. You can't call someone a fool, or else you might come under judgment. You've heard it said, thou shalt not commit adultery. I say, whoever lusts after a woman has already committed in his heart. It's just a little anger. It's just a couple of little bad thoughts. And I'm going to be under judgment for these things? So the last snowstorm that we had, it was very wet snow. I mean, as soon as it fell, before this was very dry. We couldn't make snowballs until the very end. Then when you did, as soon as you packed them in, they were like an ice ball, and they would hurt, bruise somebody the moment it hit somebody. I'm sure it didn't stop some from having snowball fights. But so when that first one hit, it was very wet, and as soon as it would fall, you could almost immediately make snowballs. People were making snowmen, all kinds of stuff. And we have a garden, that we had surrounded with poultry wire, put a gate on it. We've got rabbits something fierce. Even though we're inside of city limits, we have rabbits that would get into it. So we'd put poultry wire all the way around, poultry wire over the top, put a gate on it, 4x4 posts on the end, wood going across the tops. We had this thing set. And so the snow began to fall. And if it wasn't for the fact that snow was cold, Steve was here earlier, and I want to say I bet he could definitely tell, but especially if you've got hair, you definitely can't tell that it's snowing hardly except for the cold. And Steve was expecting that joke. When that falls, it doesn't have much weight to it. It doesn't really add, just one, you can't even tell it's there. But they started collecting on top of the poultry wire, even though there was holes where there was metal that started collecting. And then it started filling in the gaps. And then before long, the 4x4 post snapped under the weight of that snow. That garden was not designed to carry snow on top of it. Not even one snowflake. Now, can it bear it? Sure, a few. But when it got to be too much, it could not bear the load. And it snapped. In the book of 1 John, in chapter 3, we get a good description here of what happens when we go on continually sinning. Be it something we deem in the physical sense as really bad, or be it those little problems. Starting in verse 4, it says, everyone who makes a practice of sinning also practices lawlessness. Sin is lawlessness. You know that he appeared in order to take away sins, he being Jesus. and in him there is no sin. No one who abides in him keeps on sinning. No one who keeps on sinning has either seen him or known him. Everyone who makes a practice of sinning, continual, keeps on sinning. In him there is no sin. So when it comes to those little sins, we need to remember that they add up. They have consequences. So doing an about face, let's talk about the good things, the little good things. When I was younger, I was attending a church. My family was no longer attending that church, but I was still wanting to go. And this was before I could drive. I had no way to get there myself. All I had was a desire to be there. And so another friend, an older individual, offered to give me a ride. And that one ride, be it a simple gesture, it wasn't really very far out of the way at the time. We were only a couple of blocks away, so I was really on the way to church. And, you know, I probably wasn't as expressly thankful as I should have been to let him know, but that one ride turned into rides. And it turned into almost a year of rides keeping me going to church. It's just a simple offer. It wasn't even out of the way for him. But I will never know what my life would have been like if I didn't remain active in trying to come together with other people who wanted to know God more and wanted to worship God through his acts and him bringing me to church when others weren't going, when my family wasn't going. I don't know where I would be. Maybe I would still be where I am right now. Maybe I would be somewhere else. Some of you are probably thinking, man, why did he give him all those rides? But that simple gesture, that little act, as some may describe it, kept me going. Titus chapter 3 and verse 14 reminds us not to look at the little things the way we do in the physical sense. It says, let our people learn to devote themselves to good works so as to help cases of urgent need and not be unfruitful. We may never know how urgent the need is that someone received a text of encouragement. We may never truly fathom how urgent it was that that other Christian received that phone call that day. We may not understand, but we've got a God on our side that can take those small things in our lives that we think are small and do great things for the kingdom. Amen. Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 10 tells us that we were created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. This doesn't have to be parting the Red Sea. If you look around and you're just waiting to get your opportunity to part the Red Sea or do something grand and spectacular and turn a stick into a snake. Speaking of which, if you ever figure that out, don't ever do that in front of me. If that's what you're looking for, you may never find that. But God doesn't need you to find something big to do for him. God can take your little thing and make it something big. Galatians chapter 6 and verse 9 says, and let us not grow weary of doing good. For in due season we will reap if we do not give up. So then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially to those who are of the household of faith. We're going to talk about a few good deeds, little good deeds. Rahab the prostitute, you may remember the story. She lived in Jericho. The Israelites were about to come and seize the city, and she hid the spies. She lowered them out the window, but she said, hey, I will hide you. Please remember us when you come back to attack this city. She was successful. They survived. They came back, and the promise was kept. Her family was restored. Jericho fell. She ended up marrying Boaz's father, Salmon, who then was the father of Obed, who was the father of Jesse, who was the father of David. She was now in the lineage of Christ, of Joseph's line. What if she gave them up? I don't recommend all the time going into what ifs about the Bible. What if God didn't use them, or what if they didn't do what God wanted them to do? God's will be done. He gives us opportunity to be a part of it. Think of Deborah and Barak, who were going to battle. Barak was told to go out and the victory would be his. He was scared. It wouldn't go unless Deborah was there. He said, okay, we're going to go. We'll take care of it, but you will not receive the honor. Someone else will. God's will still be done. Achan stole some of those little objects from Jericho that God said to destroy, save for a few things for the treasury. And he and his family, his animals and his possessions were burned and stoned. What about the Egyptian midwives, Shiphrah and Puah? They were demanded, they were ordered to kill Hebrew male babies. They decided not to. He asked, why did you not do what I've asked you to do? And they said, well, the Hebrew women, they're just vigorous. They have their babies before we even get there to help them. Because they feared God more than they feared man, God dealt well with them. God gave them families of their own. Because of their one good deed, there was a baby floating in the river when Pharaoh's daughter was present. She found the basket and raised Moses as her own. Because of her good deed, Moses went on to lead the nation of Israel out of Egypt. One final story before the sermon is through. Irina Sendler, that name may be familiar to you, maybe not. In 1999, a few high school students from Kansas started researching this woman. They made a documentary called A Life in a Jar. Since then, Irina has been awarded. She has passed away now, but she was awarded, she was recognized. She was a Polish nurse. She was working in German-occupied Poland at the Warsaw Ghetto. In November of 1940 is when the Warsaw Ghetto was instituted, and it was basically a confinement or prison camp for Jews. She worked for the social services to go in and aid them and provide medical support to them. At its height, there were 460,000 Jews imprisoned at this camp. She, with the help of a few others, were able to rescue 2,500 Jewish children. They relocated them to Polish homes. They relocated them to other care facilities, orphanages, some convents. But she would record their Jewish names and their family heritage. She would write them on a small piece of tissue paper, stick them in a jar, seal them tight, and had them buried under a tree at her home. She gave them those new identities Unfortunately, most of their families had died afterwards. Some were relocated with their families. But on October 18th, 1943, Irina was captured by the Germans and beaten. She was questioned, beaten, and tortured for almost a month. Some of the worst of her injuries were they broke her legs and they broke her feet. But she never divulged any of that information. She was sentenced to death. But that small group of cohorts that she had bribed the German officers, and on her way to the firing squad, she was set free, and she escaped. She had to go on hiding after that and wasn't able to rescue any other children, but 2,500 lives were changed, because she smuggled one kid out. And she said, if I can get the one out, then I can get another one out. And she continued as long as she could. In the 25th chapter of Matthew, verse 34, it says, then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. They then asked, what do you mean? When did we clothe you? When did we feed you? In verse 40, it says, and the king will answer to them, truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me. These little things that we're doing add up. God can and does use big and small things to accomplish his will. Like that parable of the mustard seed and the faith the size of a mustard seed, God doesn't need us to come up with something big. He just needs us to have a little bit of genuine faith. Something so small can make the biggest impact. If you're feeling significant, if you are feeling like maybe I'm not doing enough, maybe my little good deeds for the kingdom aren't adding up, I can assure you that they do. I can assure you when you encourage, when you comfort after a loss, when you pray for, when you write those cards, when you greet, when you help, it makes changes. It's bigger than you think. But if you've got some little sins, some little things that you've convinced yourself that aren't that big of a problem, maybe aren't that big of a deal, you need to understand that we weren't like the snow on the garden. We are not meant to bear the weight of sin. We cannot do it. And you may say, it's just something small. It's not that big of a deal. That something small costs the blood of Christ to pay for. So if there's something that we can do for you, something small in the physical eyes that God can make bigger, we would like to do that for you now as we stand and sing.
I am mine. Jesus is